Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks so much for listening. Wherever you are, whenever you're doing this, because people listen at all different times of the day all over the world, and it's really exciting when I get feedback from people telling me where they are and what they think about what we're doing. So thanks. Tonight's guest has done some very interesting things. Reba Riley talks about post-traumatic church syndrome, and she went out and got introduced to a lot of different religions to check them out. So I'm really looking forward to hear about her walkabout. But first, as usual, tonight's metaphysical musing. And it's always interesting to me what silly thing sets me off thinking in some direction that most people would not be thinking about. Somebody posted something online about how strange it was that Costco had food that could be stored for long periods of time that the so-called preppers would use, people who are preparing for a disaster scenario and storing food for both that will store for a long time, but also storing a lot of it so they could have food to eat for a long time. And one of my ongoing jokes is how many different end of the world scenarios I've lived through. I think at this point we're up to 7. But one of them was Y2K, and I was writing for a magazine, a computer magazine, and I got this great assignment of talking to the people at the far extremes of the points of view about Y2K. And on one end were the Uber geeks who said, yeah, we know about this. We created the problem because we had to write it that way when computers were expensive and clunky, but we fixed it. It's not a problem. And on the other end were that particular iteration of people who were heading to Wyoming with lots of food and ammunition and guns. And they were absolutely sure that that was the thing they had to do because the world, as we know, it was coming to an end, this time because computers were going to die. And I've watched that scenario unfold for all kinds of things, including a coming ice age they talked about in the 1970s, with as much vehemence as global warming and telling exactly which cities would be wiped out and which animals would be wiped out. So I've been watching and listening this stuff for a long time. And don't get me wrong, I've been an EMT, I've been on rescue squads. I think people should be prepared for a reasonable emergency. So last year we had a 5-day power outage because of an ice storm that took all the power lines out. And that's a real problem in the winter because when your power goes off and it's cold out, it's life-threatening. Not so much in the summer. But, you know, that's 3 days, 5 days. You should have a plan. You should have a little bit of stuff. You should think it through. On the other end of that spectrum is a guy who went into a shelter 15 years ago and eventually came out to find out that his wife, who did not go in the shelter with him, had remarried and had a family, and the world had gone on without him, to which his response was, oh, I guess I was wrong. There's a middle ground in all of this, but that's not the metaphysical part. The metaphysical part really is, why do people get so frightened about this? And as I thought about it, I realized that there's one underlying huge lie that isn't even stated directly, but it's the lie that's underneath all the fear. And that lie is that we are each separate and alone, and we're in danger. And that because you're alone and it's a dangerous world, of course, you know, if you're really alone, then there wouldn't be as much danger because, you know, who would hurt you? But that's the feeling everyone has. I'm in this by myself or just me and my family, and it's a dangerous world and I have to protect myself. And it's not that there aren't dangers in the world. There are certainly dangers in the world. But anybody who is telling you to be afraid, be very afraid of whatever it is. You know, my favorite or least favorite at the moment is the National Rifle Association telling people to buy the guns that they're telling them to buy and the ammunition they're telling them to buy. And people are running out to do that. And the arms manufacturers are making a lot of money. But anybody who's telling you to be afraid and there isn't actually something in front of you that you can prove is really a danger to you, they are doing it to manipulate you. So the NRA is a good example because they're a front organization for the arms manufacturers. And whether you believe anything else, they did get people to buy guns and ammo. But it's all based on fear. It's all based on paranoia. It's not necessarily based on anything that anybody has actually experienced. It's based on stories that are being told. And on the spiritual side of all of this, any religion or spiritual tradition that talks about the dark side and the intention of the dark side talks about the main tool of that intention being lies, and that those lies create fear, and that that's how the dark side manipulates people. And I don't think I have to take the thought any further. When people are using propaganda and telling lies in order to get people to do something that they would not otherwise do, you can be pretty sure that upstream, the intention is not pure. The intention is very dark, and it's mostly about manipulating people and controlling them. So we went from silly to pretty intense there, but sometimes it's like that. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now we get to have a wonderful time with my guest, Reba Riley. Are you with us, Reba?
I am. Good evening. Thank you so much for having me.
A pleasure. I'm fascinated with what you set out to do and what you learned. And I know you have a book that you've written about it, which is coming out soon. So tell us what you did.
Well, the book is called Post-Traumatic Church Syndrome. It's a memoir of humor and healing in 30 religions. And What I set out to do, as many things are in life, I didn't actually set out to do it. It kind of surprised me. When I turned 29, I found myself very ill. I was chronically ill, and the doctors could not tell me what was wrong with me, and my body was going downhill with no answers. And that drove me to a spiritual crisis, as I think it does for many people when your body is sick. I had been very spiritual my entire life, and I was actually at one time studying to be in the ministry, Christian ministry, and I had walked away from that in my early 20s, really left my faith completely behind and my religion, and lost a lot of things with that, which I'm sure we'll get into. But when I was 29, I found out that I wanted to believe in something. I didn't know what. I knew I didn't want to believe in the God of my childhood, and I wanted to just reach beyond the religion that I was brought up with and find something real that I could believe in, that was stronger than the illness that I was dealing with in my body and that could help me overcome what I like to call post-traumatic stress syndrome. I'm sure you have a lot of listeners out there who suffer from it. And as soon as they hear the words, they know who they are. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was I was confronted with this crisis, and the idea to go out and explore religions was what came to me. And I think that when we're ready, you know, the teacher appears. I know that's an ancient philosophy, but the path through the 30 religions wasn't really because I wanted to find a religion. It was because I didn't know what else to do. There are a lot of things in life, if you're dealing with them, that we have prescribed paths. If you are, overweight, for example, you could go to Weight Watchers or join a gym. If you're dealing with alcoholism, we have Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're dealing with post-traumatic stress syndrome, there's really not a great resource, at least not something I could find, because you can't just go back to the church. That's not, really a viable option. And so it was basically a therapeutic program, almost like a shock therapy for me to go to these religions. And it was like a ladder to try to kind of climb out, one rung at a time of this emptiness that I had gotten into with my spiritual health. And so that's how it started, was this idea of 30 religions before I turned 30. So I had a year. And originally, I was not planning to ever write about it, talk about it. It was just for me to figure out myself and what I could believe in. But it has snowballed in the last few years, and now I'm getting the opportunity to tell my story. So
where did you start, and how did you do this? Because that's quite a task, finding one place after another, getting introducing yourself, and especially when you're doing it as part of unfolding the answer to a spiritual crisis.
Yeah. Well, I did the hardest thing first, which if I had it to do over again, I don't know that I would do it this way, but I went back to the church that I grew up in, and I sat through a service. And that was like, that took more courage for me to do than probably any of the other things that I did that year. Because
I'll
it
bet.
Was like, it was like whacking a, a bee's nest, emotionally speaking. Going back there, I hadn't sat in that pew since I was, 18 years old, and I had been through so much, and I walked back in there, and, it was the same, and I was so different, and I was so angry, and just, it was like holding up a mirror to myself and seeing how ugly I had become spiritually, that I couldn't sit there and, be calm and peaceful in this church service. I was just very angry and very, very bitter. So that was where I started, and that's actually where I ended as well. So I kind of came full circle with the project.
And so you went to the church of your childhood.
Yep, church of my childhood.
And then where'd you go?
Let's see, the next place I went was a drive-in church near Lake Erie. I didn't know that there was a thing as a drive-in church.
I've only heard of those in Nevada. So where was this?
It was near Lake Erie, which is the Great Lakes coastline of Ohio. And they do it during resort season. And it's just exactly what it sounds like. You drive in, come as you are in your car, is their slogan. And I took my mother-in-law, and this was a relatively easy one. I didn't have any like major post-traumatic stress syndrome meltdowns because it was so funny almost. We're like we were in a convertible, and we were in a parking lot, and instead of clapping, you would toot the horn, and you were listening to the speaker. I know, you were listening to the preacher through your radio, and it was very much like going to a drive-in movie, except it was a drive-in church. So that one was a little bit more of a, kind of funny, fun experience, not too, ultra deep.
And then,
I went to an African American Baptist church, which had fantastic music. I took a friend of mine who was Catholic and had never been to a service that wasn't Catholic. And so she spent most of the hour looking like, or I'm sorry, more like 3 hours, looking like she had been, on a roller coaster, her hair blown back, experiencing, the preaching and the music with the African-American Baptist church. I actually went to two Baptist churches. One was a Free Will Baptist church. And then, let's see, what was next after that? Then I tried a church called King Avenue Methodist, which is in Columbus, Ohio, and they are an inclusive Methodist denomination, which I had never experienced. I know I told you I went to the church of my childhood, but I didn't tell you what it was. It was a non-denominational, charismatic, Pentecostal-leaning type of church. So, you know, hands in the air, rebuking the devil, falling on the floor, speaking in tongues, the whole nine yards of that. And very, very conservative. And I had never experienced a church that was radically inclusive to the gay community. And so that was a great experience, Union Avenue Methodist was. I went to the Buddhist temple, or I'm sorry, the Buddhist Meditation Center, also in Columbus. And I think it's important for you and your listeners to know that I did all of this, not only while I was chronically ill, but I didn't travel because I physically really couldn't. And I was working as well, so I didn't have the, you know, vacation time or anything to be able to travel. So a lot of memoirs that you read is people that have, you know, taken a year and gone all over the world. But my sojourn was, it was a spiritual sojourn without leaving home. And I wanted to go ahead and bring that up just because a lot of people think that, you know, exploration is beyond their reach because they can't quit their job and go to India or whatever. But I think we only find what we seek. And before I started looking just in my little town in Ohio, I had no idea that all of these places existed.
Right.
You know, within a few miles of my house. I didn't travel more than 2 hours the entire year to go to any of these places. So I just want to encourage anyone out there.
There's an old saying, you don't know what you don't know, and there's no way for you to know that you don't know.
Right. And you seek what you find. So, you find what you seek. And that's what I discovered is as soon as I started looking, you know, these places started presenting themselves, some accidental. I mean, I had a vague idea when I started. I made a list, but the list kind of made me in the end. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So I really didn't know. You know, I didn't know that within 2 miles of my house in Columbus, Ohio, there was a Hare Krishna Center. There was a Buddhist Center, a Christian spiritualist temple. Not far, we had a Hindu temple. I mean, all of these things were right within my reach, but I didn't know it. So I like to encourage people to make sure that they're looking around them. And where were we? We were at the Buddhist Meditation Center?
We were at the Buddhist Meditation Center.
Well, and I could go through. I mean, I've got the whole list, all 30 of them, but I'm not sure if there's any you have particular questions about.
Well, I'm more interested in the ones that either were most striking to you or had the most effect on you.
Yeah, so obviously the first one, going back to the church of my childhood, showed me how angry and bitter I was. So that was the biggest thing. Some of the other ones that I mentioned, you know, the Baptist, the drive-in, the King Avenue, those were good experiences in that it got me out there and it got me to face my fears. Of actually being in church, because I think for a lot of people who have been through similar paths to mine or have had damage and trauma from the church, it's hard to even walk in, you know, right. So that was a little bit of just exposure therapy. I would say the first place that I went where I really had an experience was I went to the Christian spiritualist temple, and I didn't even know what the Christian spiritualists were. I had no idea that they existed. Are you familiar with them, David?
Not necessarily Christian spiritualists, but spiritualists, yes. And the folks that I've met that do that, essentially they incorporate contacting the spirit world as part of the service and what the ministry does. So that most of them are mediums and do that work as part of the services. Was that the kind of thing that they were doing?
Yep, it is. And so but they're Christian spiritualists. So I walk in, if you can just imagine, this is it was formerly like a downtown Baptist church, you know, maybe built in early 1900s, late 1800s, stained glass windows. you walk pipe organ, you walk in, you're expecting this is like a traditional church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a spiritual forum. And I walk into the sanctuary and there are 20 card tables set up all around the perimeter. And people are doing, you know, tarot card readings, crystals, mediums, psychic stuff, mm-hmm. Reiki healing, energy healing. I mean, you would have thought, my socks were just completely blown off. I mean, I had no idea that Christianity was so deep and wide that it could contain, you know, the brand of Christianity I grew up with that rebuked people that did those types of things and called them witches, and could also contain a denomination of people who did that within their service.
Right.
Communicating with the dead, and basically using it was a conglomeration of, you know, using the Bible, using prayer, and then more traditional spiritualist type of reading. And I was just, you know, I was blown away. So I went around to these different card tables, and different people were giving me readings, and I didn't really know where I stood on it, but I was just kind of trying to go with the flow. And I sat down with one lady, and she looks at me and she goes, you're on a quest, and it has to do with the number 30. I don't know what that means, but it's going to mean something to you. And I said, uh-huh. It definitely am. And then she said, she said a lot of things, but what affected me the most was she said that I was a healer, and I was called to be a healer, and that that I would lead by my example and I would heal with my words. And at this point, I was a spiritual disaster. I was a physical disaster. I'm looking at this lady going, lady, what kind of sick joke is it to have a sick healer?
Not knowing that almost all healers become healers by going through a healing crisis.
Well, apparently, didn't know that. I did not know that.
Right.
But the really interesting part of that story is that when I was 14 years old in the church of my childhood, which I already told you about, there was a traveling minister. We would have called him a prophet back then, who said exactly the same words to me when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am, just having come fresh off of, you know, visiting this church of my childhood, and I walk into this Christian spiritualist temple that's the most opposite thing you could possibly think of, but would still have Jesus at the front. And this lady says the same thing to me.
Starts to make you wonder.
Right. And so I feel like that was, you know, I say the Godiverse. I couldn't say the word God for a really long time because it had such bad mm-hmm. connotations for me. But so the Godiverse is basically saying to me, not only are you on the right path, but I'm speaking through these very different things. When I was taught that the only way that God could speak was through this specific path, you know, this very, very
right.
narrow brand of Christianity.
Right. Hey, we're going to go
to a
break.
So that was the first eye-opener.
We're going to go to a break in a couple of minutes. So I want to make sure people know your website and how to find you. What's the best place for them to go?
They can go to 30by30.com. It's thirtybythirty, 30by30.com.
Fantastic. My guest is Reba Riley, and we'll be back to hear more about this incredible journey of hers. But we're going to get some messages here on the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This week's episode, Trouble on Rock Hill.
Ain't nothing like running up and down Rock Hill.
Hey, let's move this rock.
Whoa! Sassy, Johnny's stuck under that rock. Yeah, girl, go tell Mr. Gunderson to bring his truck. You'll tell him, but only after you dispel a stereotype associated with shelter pets? People think shelter pets come with lots of initial veterinary costs?
It's dusty under here.
But in reality, most shelter pets have been vaccinated, neutered, and microchipped in case they get lost.
My pants ripped.
Sassy, Johnny needs help. What Johnny really needs is more discipline and better parental supervision. You use big words, Sassy.
Still under the rock.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like,
"Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Reba Riley, author of Post-Traumatic Church Syndrome. And we were getting the rundown on all the amazing places that you went. And yes, spiritualist churches are definitely out there. And each one of them has a different flavor because each group has their own approach to it. So you found out God was actually paying attention to you.
I found out, yeah, and I would have said, you know, the God of Earth was paying attention. And I found out that it could speak through people that I never imagined that it could because of how I was taught. So that was right. A really big moment to realize that this, you know, that this God of Earth was much, much larger than the I would like to say, too small God that I was brought up with. You know, the God that I was brought up with did not welcome everyone at his table, or at least right. That's what, you know, the people told me that taught me. So yeah, the Christian Spiritualist Temple was in the summer. I began the journey in the summer, and it was at the end of the summer, and that's when I think I took a turn and realized, you know, this really was going somewhere. It was maybe more than just rungs on a ladder. You know, maybe I really would find what I was looking for.
And so you went to both Christian churches and many other religions.
I did.
Which of the Christian religions had a lot of impact, and which of the ones that were non-Christian had a lot of impact?
Well, I ran into, and as these things happen, you know, it wasn't a coincidence, but I ran into an urban monk. That's how I refer to him in the book. And he was of Eastern Orthodox faith, mm-hmm. Eastern Orthodox Christian faith. Professed monk, had taken his vows, and he lives in downtown Columbus and runs a mission there. And I got very involved with him and his mission. And he had actually studied under the Dalai Lama. He had taken his vows in Buddhism as well. So he was an interfaith monk. And
wow.
It was amazing. I studied meditation with him for about 3 months, and I would say that was the major turning point as far as my own spirituality went, was meeting the urban monk and sitting with him a couple times a week and learning to meditate, learning to be quiet and listen. And so I don't know that it was actually, you know, the Eastern Orthodox tradition that spoke to me, although I really found something very comforting about the liturgy and the icons and the stillness that they have in their tradition, as opposed to some of our more Americanized Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really the urban monk himself, my teacher.
Right. You found your teacher. It's interesting. I don't know if you noticed it, because I noticed on your list you went to a Hindu temple. A lot of the practices, in, at least personal practices, not necessarily the service, in Catholicism and Eastern Orthodox are very, very similar to Hindu.
Very. I noticed that when I was there. It's amazing how much they overlap. The Eastern traditions of Christianity are so much more, they have so much more in common with Buddhism and Hinduism than our Americanized versions of Christianity.
Yeah. Saying a prayer over and over again, counting the number of times you said it with beads of some sort,
mm-hmm.
incense, candles, icons and statues, all of that is cross-cultural in a lot of different religions, but people don't know much outside their own tradition, so they won't necessarily see that.
Well, I remember when I walked into the Hindu temple, I was there for Diwali, which is their New Year celebration, mm-hmm. and all the men had ashes on their forehead. And the first thing I thought is, oh my gosh, I've walked into some, you know, Ash Wednesday is what it looked like. And they had, you know, different markings to define which gods and goddesses that they followed. And I just thought that was so interesting that the ashes were the same, and then they have, you know, they use water in similar ways.
Mm-hmm.
There are these things, ritually speaking, that do tie the religions together, especially when we were talking about Eastern religions. But the amazing thing to me is how much more alike we are than different in all of the traditions that I went to and through. And granted, we're all speaking, you know, the benefit of hindsight, because as I was going through them, I was going through a very difficult time, you know, spiritually. But looking back, you can just see how united they are, because all of these rituals that everyone is doing, it's the intention behind them. It's
right.
Not even about what they're doing. It's that they're putting this beautiful intention out there saying, I want to reach something greater than me. I want to reach out to the divine. I want to reach out to the Godiverse. I want to reach out to God. But really what we're saying is, I want to connect with something that's bigger than I am. And we do it in, you know, a million different ways, but when it comes down to it, the intention is the same.
And it's also interesting, the more, what's a good way to say it, the more sophisticated and separated from the natural world that a culture gets, the more their religion is separated from nature and nature spirits and traditions of nature.
Which is really too bad.
Yeah, so the Eastern traditions and the pagan traditions and Native American and all of the earth-based religions have traditions that carry through into the more urban religions, if you will. You know, even Catholicism was really a city religion. The bits and pieces are there, but the connection to nature is gone. And,
yeah, which is really
so
bad.
You know, it wasn't that they, it isn't in Hinduism, they're not praying to multiple gods. They're praying to an aspect of the personality of God that will give them what they need to learn at that moment. And they may switch.
I didn't know that until I went there. I thought there were 300 million, you know, gods and goddesses, and the priest goes, Oh, no, no, no. We worship one God. It's aspects of the same God. And I thought, well, that's just so, you know, that's what you need sometimes. Sometimes you need a God who doesn't look like the God that you're angry at.
Right, right. And sometimes you need a God that's female and can give you the mothering that you need. And sometimes you need a God that's an elephant.
Yeah, I think so. I totally agree.
It's the ultimate strength, so.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think they really have something going with that.
Yeah, the Hindu stories are amazing. You know, the cosmology and the way the stories fit together and who the personalities are. But underneath all of it, it's aspects of God that are interacting in ways that you can tell stories about. So that it's not just one untouchable, unknowable out there who exists. You know, that's what's underneath all of that. And saying, okay, but also all of this is going on, just like you. And here's how you can learn from it. Really is fascinating stuff. So I noticed on your list that you went to a Native American ritual as well.
I did. And they would have been next for me to tell you about anyway. So we're on the same labeling. The Nemenha are part of the Native American church. They are an inclusive tribe, so they operate under the principles of spiritual adoption, which was good for me because though I do have some Native American lineage, I was actually turned away from 7 tribes that I tried to go sit with. And I have found that that's not really that unusual, simply because there are many that have been burned by journalists and, you know, just want to keep their faith private. So I understand that. But I was so thankful to find the Nemenha. Chief Iggy Hoopwatcher accepted me with open arms, and I am still involved with the tribe there in Columbus. But what struck me about them, as we were talking in the former section about how we get separated from nature and earth, you know, the more sophisticated our worship gets, I felt more connected to not just the God of Earth, but the people I was with and the whole planet, you know, because we were in this, it's Sipi, it's a sweat lodge.
Yes.
Ceremony, and we were down in the mud. You know, I was covered in mud. I had to throw away the clothes that I took with, you know, that I ended up wearing because I was so covered in mud. And I've never felt more clean because we were just so, it was so base. And so I felt like, you know, we were every tribe who had ever sat together and tried to call on something greater.
Right.
And that's an experience that I think anyone that has the opportunity to, you know, be in nature and connect with God in that way, it's so different and it's so elemental and it's just, it's such a beautiful thing to be able to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, as with most of the earth-based religions, it's the elements of earth, air, fire, and water all together in that ritual space, in the darkness, which is also a very important element of it, so that you don't have the distractions.
Only distraction is how hot you are. but that's, you know, there's the ceremony in that, in the, you know, the burning off of everything that doesn't serve us.
Right.
And it was a beautiful.
And I'm sure somebody showed you how to get your face really close to the ground when the lodge gets hot.
Yes. Yes. They actually have a phrase for it in the Nemenha. They tell you to suck mud if you're too hot. Get your face right down in there and suck mud.
Yep. 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 Exactly. Yeah, I haven't done a sweat in a long time and I miss it, but it was certainly part of what I went through along the way. And so what else? You went to a synagogue for Yom Kippur, which is the highest high holy day of the year and very much all about ritual. What was your impression of that?
The Day of Atonement. Well, I was very ill that day, and I hadn't done any research. I just showed up. I wish I could tell you I was in better shape, but I didn't know you had to have a ticket. I mean, it was a comedy of errors for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know you had to have a ticket. I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. I didn't know that I was supposed to not be drinking water. You know, it's a day of
day of fasting.
fasting from, but I didn't know I was fasting from water also. So I just made a lot of mistakes while I was there. But what was neat for me being there was I spoke with a gentleman. He was telling me how he doesn't come, you know, he doesn't come to synagogue. He's not really practicing. He doesn't practice Judaism, although he is a Jew. He said, you know, I'm Jewish. It's just my heritage, and I've learned to celebrate it even if I don't practice.
There are many Jews that only go to synagogue on Yom Kippur.
Right, and he didn't seem to be very fond of religion in general, and so I kind of found a kindred spirit with this guy, and I walked away realizing that I was Christianish, right? So I was born. You don't choose your religion any more than you choose your, you know, the color of your skin. You're born into it, and it's part of my heritage. And until that day, until Yom Kippur, I don't think I had ever looked at it like that. I looked at it like something I had to overcome, not something that I could in some way embrace. And so that was what really moved me from Yom Kippur, not so much the actual experience, but that conversation that I had with the gentleman at the synagogue and being able to think, maybe there's something here that I can celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing about being exposed to Yom Kippur in particular, but the synagogue, is realizing that the things that are going on there are exactly the same as what Jesus experienced in his day. In the same way, using the same scroll of the Torah, using the same prayers. That all was being done exactly the same way when Yeshua was doing all the stuff that people now tell the stories about. And
it's beautiful to be able to be connected in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, that was a neat experience.
So through all of this, you were also in a healing crisis, and I'm guessing that the way this story unfolds, you not only came to peace with religion in some way, but also that you had a healing from this.
I did. And it was actually 6 months after I was finished with the project. And I guess miracles come in a lot of different forms, and mine did come through a doctor eventually, but I've seen 200 doctors. So mm-hmm. It was a miracle to find, you know, one who could diagnose and treat me. And I was radically better. I mean, from the moment I was diagnosed until I was fully recovered was less than a month. And I don't mean fully recovered. I'll deal with this disease for the rest of my life because it's an autoimmune disorder.
Right.
But I got my life back within 30 days from the time that I was diagnosed. And I had been, you know, seeking a diagnosis for 8 years. So it couldn't have been more miraculous for me. And it was a completely life-changing to get my health back. So I'm very thankful. But I'm also thankful for the illness. I am, in retrospect, because it brought me to a place of spiritual need that otherwise I may never have come to.
Yeah, it's some people call it the cosmic 2x4. You know, really have to get your attention now. Whack.
Yeah, you really have to get your attention. Yes, I would agree. It was definitely a 2x4. But I did receive a physical healing, and could not be more thankful. But you know, I think it has to sometimes happen that way when you are when you need the spiritual healing. I think that sometimes for some people, and I'm one of them, that had to resolve first before I could become physically balanced.
And there's a reason that all these experiences are called walkabout or spiritual quest or whichever of the many terms you want to use, that it's going off into the unknown, searching for something you're not quite sure you can define, leaving behind who you thought you were.
And what you thought you knew.
And what you knew. And saying, okay, so what do I need to do next? And traditionally, and I have one of my guests from a few weeks ago is actually doing this right now. Traditionally, you sell or give away everything that you have and say goodbye to, literally say goodbye to your family and your life and go somewhere exotic with what you can carry, not knowing exactly how you're going to create circumstances for yourself and let spirit unfold that for you. And she knew that she's going to do things in many places around the South Pacific. And she started in Bali. And what she wants to do is learn the indigenous dancing of a number of different places. And through the wonders of Facebook and some other technologies, I get to hold her hand through all of this, listening to her story as she goes through that. So that's a bigger drama in some ways because she left home and she left the place that she knew. But it's the same trip.
It is the same trip. And that is one of my big takeaways, is that you don't have to do that because we're not all in a position to be able to do that.
And the trip ultimately is internal.
Yeah, no matter where you are, right?
Yeah. You know, you need all this stuff to do the internal work. But all the movement is happening inside of you. And so you started out at the beginning of the story in post-traumatic church syndrome and very reactive to the church of your family and your childhood. And where'd you wind up?
In the church in general.
Where'd you wind up?
Well, if it was an easy answer, I may not have a whole book. But the answer doesn't really come with a pre-printed label, but I ended up at peace. And the way that I look at religion now is that I can walk into any one of these places, including the church of my childhood, and I can worship with anyone at any time because I understand what it is and what it isn't. And I can remove myself from the things that I don't agree with and just go with the flow of the spirit in the place. Because no matter what people are doing, it's the same God, it's the same spirit, it's the same intention, and I can capture that. So I worship in multiple places and sometimes at home, and a lot of my communion is through my work with writing. Speaking with people like yourself and making those connections. So it's not like I, landed on one church. I feel like that might be a little bit boring too if I had, after this whole thing, just landed in one place and said I was a lifer. I want to be very involved with interfaith work going forward as well, because I think I would like to inspire people to try something that they don't, maybe think that they would even like, or just step out on a religious limb, go visit somewhere that you may not have thought of before and see what you can take away from it. Because there's so much to be gained by experiencing a different religious culture.
I've been very fortunate that way. And so I can really appreciate, I don't know anybody that went about it quite the way that you have. I kind of stumbled through it, which I guess is the same process. But
I was going to say, I think I stumbled. If you had seen me on Yom Kippur, you would know that I stumbled through it too.
Right. You're stumbling through it, but you're being guided by spirit, but you don't know it while you're in the middle of it. And in each of those places, it was such an honor to be included in the prayer circle of those people who frequently did not have any reason to include outsiders. So, it's amazing to do that. And you do realize that there's one God and all the arguing is basically blasphemy. When somebody says, well, which God do you, I'm like, well, do you believe there's only one God? If you believe there's only one God, then that question is blasphemy, and steam come out of their ears and they don't know what to do with it. But that's truly the question. If this is oneness, if there's only one God, if there's only one whatever this is that we're experiencing, then all the arguments are not just pointless, they're blasphemy.
Yeah, and I think it's such a vital thing to understand that there is one God, and we're all connected. I know at the beginning of the program you were talking about that, the illusion of the fact that we are separate. And I would say the crowning moment or enlightenment, if you will, of my entire experience was when I was in meditation and I saw God, or the Godverse, as I say, as a disco ball, a divine disco ball. And I know that sounds funny, but if you think about it, what I saw was that each one of us, everybody listening, everybody everywhere, every soul, and every paradigm has a little glass on this disco ball. And all the totality of us together is the unity and the dynamic of this divinity. And what that allowed me to do is to say, okay, my brother-in-law, who thinks I am Satan incarnate for doing this project, he's just on the other side of the disco ball.
That's,
you know,
right.
He's on the other side of the disco ball, but he's part of this too.
Right. We're going to have to wrap this up in a minute, but I want to give you one little piece that will probably surprise you. The image that the Hindu mystics use in their scriptures to describe the true nature of the universe is a net of jewels.
Cool.
Not very far from a disco ball.
Not very far from a disco ball. Not very
just
far at all.
Spots of light connected together in a geometric pattern. And that's a tradition that's thousands of years old, and it's a mystical tradition with, you know, many, 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 many generations of people confirming the same kind of image. So you got it right. You saw a very prime aspect of the universe, which is,
I'm very thankful to have been there.
So my guest has been Reba Riley, who is just delightful and just wrote the book Post-Traumatic Church Syndrome, which is coming out when?
November by Chalice Press.
Fantastic. Hopefully we can have you back when it launches and we'll have some more conversation. Her website is 30x30, spelled out, not numbers. And I'm looking forward to getting the book when it comes out.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been delightful talking with you.
Absolutely wonderful time. Thanks so much for being here. And another wonderful evening with another wonderful guest. And if you're curious about my work, you can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding on the contact tab is every conceivable technology to get in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment of what's going on with whatever the situation is, a person, place, situation, whatever problem, and to see what I can give you about what's going on and how my work might be helpful. So please get in touch. And if you're looking for more about the show or the show archives, you can find that in plain sight at thefarkasfiles.com. And you can also find the podcasts on iTunes Podcasts, among many other places that the Empower Radio feed and all the shows from Empower Radio can be found. So thank you again so much for making us a part of your week. Always wonderful to realize how many people are listening to the show. And again, take a look at who's telling you to be afraid, because the truth is we're all together in this and there's nothing to be afraid of. But it takes a while to get that. So take a deep breath and take that one in. And until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.